If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. We head up until 2 o'clock. We got the cuts before the show is over. No press conferences today for the Chiefs, but a lot of that stuff going on the last week and a half or so. Let's talk some football, some NFL football from Pro Football Focus. Trevor Sikkema joins us here in the zone. Trevor, what's up, man? How are you?
I am doing great. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us as well. I want to talk some Chiefs with you and some NFL as well, but curious to your reaction, you know, around there in Tampa and around the Bucs and things like that, along with Pro Football Focus. But what's your reaction and takeaway from the Miami tampering investigation that resulted in the two draft picks? Obviously, it impacts New England. It impacts Tampa as well, where Brady played for both those teams while the Miami Dolphins were in contact with them. What's your takeaway and viewpoint of what the NFL found and what Miami was doing?
Yeah, I mean, when this report first came out, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It's not that I didn't think that it was true. It's not that I didn't think that it had any validity to it. I just didn't think it went as far to say, like, yes, this almost happened. And so I was very skeptical about the story when it came out initially, months ago, as we were kind of talking about this. And now, obviously, an NFL investigation finds out that it was actually pretty serious. And, you know, it's crazy to think about that. You know, the whole plan of what was reported of Brady, you know, being a potential owner of the team and playing for the team and them courting Sean Payton as well, like trying to form this super team, like I feel like we actually see in basketball all the time, right? It feels like the shifts of power will go one way or another drastically when a team can get one or two of the right pieces or go about something in a really aggressive way. And we've seen it turn into championships. Well, it felt like that's what the Miami Dolphins were doing with this whole strategy. And look, I said the whole time, I was kind of skeptical about how true it would be. But if there's any player in the NFL that would be able to pull something like this off, it would be Tom Brady. So it doesn't shock me now that we have been told that this is something that happened, that Tom Brady was at the center, that he is about the only player in the NFL that holds that much power, whose brand alone from his name recognition is something that could be a vital part to an organization, not just as a player, but as an owner and a part owner and just having as much control as it sounded like the Dolphins were about to give this guy. And I don't blame the Dolphins, right? They
yeah.
watched Brady beat him up for about 20 years. So yeah, I think that goes into it. But just a crazy story all around of what kind of happened and what we found out.
I was right along with you when it first came out. I'm like, come on, man. An owner, a player, like, I mean, he's going to Miami. Like, it sounded odd because we had never really heard anything about it. And then all of a sudden just comes out like, oh, he was close to signing with the Miami Dolphins and he was close to being an owner, you know, and maybe playing and they were going to get Sean Payton and all this other stuff. And then the Flores lawsuit comes out. So it ends the whole thing. And then he decides he wants to come back. But is there a relationship with Bruce Arians to where he'll come back only on the contention that Arians is not the coach and all these other things that were coming out? One of the things that I would have a question about is, let's say this thing happened. Let's say Tom Brady goes and buys in and gets a percentage of the Miami Dolphins as an owner. For him to be allowed to play, what I understand is that the other owners would have to vote on that. And if that's the case, there's no way the, you know, Glazer or Kraft or some of the other owners, if they find out that there was tampering going on, that they would then approve for Brady to be able to play. So that part of it, I wonder how close it was to him maybe being an owner/player at the same time.
Yeah, I wonder if there were just more things that they found out about it, right? Because, you know, whenever you're doing something new for the first time, there's going to be a lot of people who aren't happy with it just because they're not benefiting from it, right?
Right,
they might be ahead of the curve on what is, you know, currently the status quo. So I think there are a lot of teams that would be like, hold on, whoa. How do we stop this? Essentially, like, pulling out all of the stops to see, like, okay, we don't want this to happen because this all of a sudden changes the balance of power. It changes how things are done. And I think you're right. I don't know if it would have had to been unanimous or not for them to vote, but I think that there are probably a handful of owners, certainly the Glazers in Tampa and Robert Kraft in New England, who would have said, no, you're not getting away with this. We're not letting you do this. And look, Tom Brady has a way with words, right? He's a persuasive guy. But even with that being the case, I don't think that Tampa, certainly with this tampering stuff that would have come out, would have been, for as much as they like Tom Brady and respect him, and I think that they would have allowed him to do this if he went about it the right way, I'm not so sure that certainly as it played out, Tampa would have been cool with all this. They would have said, okay, you can go to the Dolphins, but we better get something from you. Like, we better get multiple first-round picks from the Dolphins or something like that. So I think that if it would have gone through, it's not like the Dolphins would have just pulled a fast one on everybody and the whole league would have had their hands tied. A lot of stuff would have gone into this, especially with the ownership part of it. So, I think that it just was the beginning of everything if it would have ended up happening.
Man, Trevor Sikkim is our guest from Pro Football Focus. Let's talk about the Chiefs. This team, one of the favorites the last few years, obviously, four straight AFC championship games, and the AFC overall has just bulked up when it comes to talent, and the AFC West as well. Chiefs coming off a disappointing loss to the Bengals and Patrick Mahomes in this offseason. What do you make of, or maybe what are your expectations? What do you think we'll see from the Chiefs offense specifically this year? That there's no Tyreek Hill. We saw them struggle at times for a good portion of the middle part of the season offensively and being able to get anything consistently going. And they were essentially one scoring drive in the second half, one extra scoring drive in the second half away from, you know, going to yet another Super Bowl with the offensive struggles. No Tyreek Hill, but what would you expect? What do you think we'll see from the Chiefs offense in terms of how good they can be, not necessarily strategy or philosophy or how they go about executing certain plays?
Yeah, it's funny when you bring expectations and reputation into the equation, how things can look differently without context, right? We can sit here and say, oh, the Chiefs didn't make the Super Bowl last year. And you realize that kind of it's basically what you said. It's one drive that could have made all the difference in the world. And that's the difference between some people panicking about the Kansas City Chiefs and calling them an absolute dynasty. It's so fine, that line of where you can have your expectations and how you can view a team. And look, I think the Chiefs certainly struggled on offense last year. I shouldn't even say struggle. Struggle feels like the wrong word. They just didn't look like that unstoppable, no-answer-for-them force that they had been in the past, but they were still a good offense, right? They still outdueled the Buffalo Bills. They still were right there for doing so with the Cincinnati Bengals. They were about to make it back to the Super Bowl, and if they do that, they have the opportunity to win it again. So it's just when people say, man, I'm worried about the Chiefs offense. I'm not worried about the Chiefs offense. I really do. I think that Andy Reid is one of the best play callers, the best offensive minds in the game of football. I think he's going to continue to be creative. And with that being the case, when you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback and you've got a coach like that, anything is possible. Yes, losing Tyreek Hill absolutely hurts. Travis Kelce getting up there in age. They've got to establish that next wave of offensive weapons that they have. And I think that the Sky Moore addition is one that I absolutely loved in the draft, and we're already seeing great returns from here in training camp. But I think also the offensive line, when you look at the offensive line, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Joe Tooney, right? You've got Orlando Brown still on the team for now. And it's like, as long as you've got that offensive line and you've got Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, you have a guy who can be elite in structure and elite out of structure. You can find good playmakers outside of that. Not to say that replacing Tyreek Hill is as easy as the snap of a finger, but something that I talk about, I love the NFL draft, and something that I talk about every single year is, yes, you want to prioritize great playmakers because they help out your team a lot, but you got to realize that great playmakers are going to come out every single year. Every single year, every team in the NFL is going to have a chance to get a fantastic playmaker because that's just where football is. You've got high school football, college football now, playing four wide receivers, five wide receivers. We are just developing more wide receivers now. Therefore, the talent is getting not only higher, but the pool is getting deeper. So with Kansas City, they're in the exact right spot. You're always going to have seasons of how your roster looks, ups, downs, peaks, and valleys. But you've got quarterback figured out, you got play caller and offensive innovator figured out, and you got offensive line figured out. I think with that being the case, a bounce back to and that elite top-tier offense of what people might have expected from the Chiefs, that's not nearly as far off as people believe.
Visiting with Trevor Sikkim of Pro Football Focus, our guest. So I've got a theory on, I obviously think that Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL, and we'll see what happens this year without Tyreek Hill. And you mentioned Sky Moore, things that I want to get into with you because I know that you liked Sky Moore in the draft, and certainly early indications are that he's looked really good at camp as well. But the struggles of the Chiefs last year through the first 12 games versus the last five games of the regular season and then first two games of the playoffs and the first half of the Bengals game versus the second half. My theory is that I think Patrick Mahomes is going to go scorched earth this year. I think this is a little bit like the Aaron Rodgers 2019 MVP year when he kind of said, you know what, bleep you. It was kind of a bleep you tour for – or 2020, I should say, 2020 season for Aaron Rodgers. Because Mahomes struggles last year, right, for a good portion of the year. This is the first time he's ever gone into an offseason, Trevor, where people have looked at him as the reason the Chiefs did not continue playing. They lose in the AFC Championship game to the Patriots, and it's because they didn't win the coin toss and he didn't get the ball. They win the Super Bowl. They lose the Super Bowl, but he was heroic in losing the Super Bowl to the Bucs. Now he goes into the offseason, and whatever happened in the second half is the reason the Chiefs do not make the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes, was he throwing the game? Did a Monstar go and touch him and take his talents? Like, what was he in the second half? And then people are saying, well, Tyreek Hill, good luck, Patrick Mahomes. He's a guy that keeps track of all those things. He keeps notes of all those things. He counted to 10 when they played the Bears after he scored a touchdown. He counted to 4 when they played the Ravens when Lamar was ranked the number one player in the NFL by the players and he was number 4. He keeps track of these things. So I think this is going to be a bleep you type tour for Patrick Mahomes, and we're going to see a guy that's going to be more locked in. Do you buy the theory, or is it, Is it more of a wait and see because we don't know what this offense is going to look like without Tyreek Hill, and we're sort of basing it off of we know how good Patrick Mahomes can be and how good Travis Kelce is and what we think the depth of the wide receiver position looks like?
No, I think that it's much more of the former. Like, I think that it's much more plausible that we're going to get a bleep you tour from Patrick Mahomes than we've got to sit here and say, what are the Chiefs going to be on offense? Mm-hmm. I mean, at the floor, right? The Chiefs are a top 10 offense in the NFL. Dare I say top 5 offense in the NFL. And that's the floor for the Chiefs. That's just how good they are, how talented Patrick Mahomes is, how good of an offensive line they have in front of them. That's the floor for this team. So it's not like there's this big wonder of, oh, are the Chiefs going to lose it on offense? It's just kind of, is that offense going to be good enough to, as we've seen, you mentioned the AFC beefing up, mm-hmm. the top tier teams in the NFC beefing up, right? Can you just keep pace with it? Can you outscore those teams? Is it that kind of an offense? They're not going to be bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's just, can you be elite enough in the playoffs, which is now getting more and more difficult as offenses get better and better around the NFL? I'm really not worried about Patrick Mahomes. I'm really not. I think that he is going to be totally fine. And honestly, I wonder if points in the year last year, I don't want to question like whether or not Patrick Mahomes was focused enough, but when you're told you're the best all the time, some people have a natural reaction to let off the gas a little bit, you know, like start doing, you know, a little bit more showboating, start mm-hmm. trying the more difficult stuff, being like, we can score at any point in time. We're just like messing around for the first half or whatever it is. And I just wonder if there were points last year to where the Chiefs were almost sipping a little bit too much of their own Kool-Aid. You know, they had the best wide receiver in the world. They have the best tight end in the NFL. They had the best quarterback. And now the offensive line, the young guys were playing well. So it was almost kind of like this, yeah, we can come back. It's fine. We're just trying stuff. Almost like they're playing backyard football a little bit at times. And I think that certainly as defenses are changing around the NFL, right, we've seen what guys like Vic Fangio, what guys like Brandon Staley have done over the last couple of years, really putting the roof on coverage, not allowing mm-hmm. these great quarterbacks to continue to hit downfield, right? They're almost testing them. They're testing them against themselves. Okay, beat us underneath. Beat us with the short stuff. And I think that it's kind of a culmination of all of those things of what we saw last year with Kansas City. They're battling a lot of those things. They're trying to figure that stuff out while coming off being one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL over the last two prior seasons. So I think all that just kind of goes into it, right? It's never a black and white thing. I think there are a lot of powers, things going on at one time that can answer why the Chiefs maybe weren't able to finish the job at the end of the year. But again, let's bring that up. They were close. Mm-hmm. They were right there. They were in that AFC Championship. They play a little bit better in the second half against the Bengals. They all go up against the Los Angeles Rams. It could be a shootout. We could be talking about the Chiefs as Super Bowl champions. They were that caliber of a team. They could have been that. They just didn't happen to be last year because winning in the NFL, as you very well know, It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's a coin flip. The margin for error is so small. And so all you can ask for, really, is that you give yourself, your roster, your team, your coaching staff, a chance to be that best team when it's all said and done. And there is without a doubt the Chiefs are still that team. It's just about locking in, about staying focused. It's about making some new playmakers out of the guys that are there now. And I think they're absolutely going to be right there in that conversation at the end of the year.
Trevor Sikkim is our guest, Pro Football Focus. And, you know, one of the things that I pointed out is, you know, wondering, you know, when or if the Chiefs can figure out the two deep. And through the first 12 games, and just the stark contrast between the first 12 versus the last 7.5 games. So I'm not counting in the Bengals second half because we're all wondering what in the heck happened at halftime after that play to Tyreek Hill. There's all these different, you know, rumors and comments and nothing actually officially reported of what may have taken place, but something happened there. So through the first 12 games of the season last year, when people were wondering if the Chiefs or what was wrong with the Chiefs offense, that this two deep had broken them. Patrick Mahomes completed 64% of his passes, 280 yards per game for 25 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, which is a 92 quarterback rating. The last five games of the regular season, Trevor, and the first two games of the playoffs and the first half of the Bengals, 7.5 games, 73%, 330 yards per game, 23 touchdowns and two interceptions with a 123 quarterback rating. I feel like something was figured out by the Chiefs in the last 7.5 games, right?
And that's why I still have faith in this team and this coaching staff and in Mahomes himself, right? Because they're able to figure things out. And some teams have the coaches to figure out issues, but they don't have the talent to really execute that. Mm-hmm. Other teams have the talent, but they don't have the coaching staff that is leading them to be able to do the things they need to do to overcome what the other team might be doing. Chiefs have both. Chiefs are one of those teams in the NFL that absolutely has both. So it was never a matter of if, it was always when with the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. And I think that they were certainly on a roll as the season went on. And the icing on the cake for what you're saying here is that Bills game. That Bills game was unbelievable. Both teams had to be basically perfect on offense for that entire game. And you know what? The Chiefs were. The Chiefs were because they were able to figure out. And that is against a good defense, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about, if you're talking about two deep coverages, right?
Yeah.
Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde are mm-hmm. two of the best in the NFL. They're one of the best, if not the best, safety duo in the NFL. So if you could figure it out against that team to continue to score, to end up beating Buffalo in that playoff game, that tells you all you need to know that, yes, they understand how to counter what a lot of defenses are doing, putting more guys in coverage, four or five guys putting that roof over top of the defense. They know how to do it, just about really going out and executing it. So that first half of the year, you're right, it struggles. It was a little bit slow out of the gate. I wonder if they were a little bit too confident in themselves, and then they really snapped into it as the year went mm-hmm. on. And so I fully expect the Chiefs to be another team that, as defenses continue to throw new things at them, they'll be able to figure it out. And as long as you are catching it hot, if you will, at the end of the season during the playoffs, you got a chance.
Trevor Sikkim is our guest, Pro Football Focus. You mentioned the wide receivers. You mentioned Sky Moore. You really liked him coming out of college and the Chiefs drafting him in the second round. One of the things we've been wondering, and I'll get your thoughts on this, the wide receiving group overall, or at least the top four, from a year ago when it was Tyreek and Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle, you know you've got a high-end Tyreek Hill. You've got a middle-of-the-road Mecole Hardman and two kind of, you know, average replacement-level players after that. Compared to this year with Juju, MVS, Mecole Hardman, and Sky Moore, there obviously is not that high-end top five, top three receiver in the NFL. But is there a chance that this receiving core 1-4 could be better as a group than the one a year ago, 1-4, that the Chiefs had?
No, I'm not going to say like talent level overall that they're better than last year. I think that would be a little bit too insulting to just how good Tyreek Hill is and how much of a difference maker he is. And you know, Travis Kelce too, right? I'm not saying that Travis Kelce is about to fall off a cliff, but every year is the year that he gets older into his 30s. And so I think that that's something to monitor. That's something that you got to pay attention to, because so much of what he was able to do early on in his career was about that yards after the catch, finding those soft spots in the zone, being able to get those extra yards and have that athleticism to him. Okay, how much does that drop off, not just this year, but in the years that follow, right? That certainly goes into the equation. I like the group that they have, right? I think that Juju Smith-Schuster He is a savvy slot receiver. He's that guy who can be very reliable for you. He can be a yards after the catch guy, or at least he certainly was a couple of years ago. And when you look at the offense that they're building, yeah, they couldn't go out and get a stud, absolute number one wide receiver. But the way they countered that is with speed, right? Mm-hmm. Nicole Arvin, speed. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, deep speed. Sky Moore, all over the field speed, right? And so what they're, I think, trying to do is say, okay, maybe we don't have Tyreek, we don't have a Cooper Kupp, we don't have a Justin Jefferson, but what we do is we're going to throw a lot of speed at you. And if you have one cornerback in your nickel package that is not athlete enough to keep up with our guys, we're going to be able to make you pay. And I think that that's kind of what they're trying to do. It's kind of a package deal thing where Tyreek Hill, when he was on this team last year, he was able to command so much attention, and you can do so much with him, right? You could have him running a shallow cross over the middle, and he can get yards after the catch. You could have him running a deep crosser in the intermediate and really have him behind that linebacker level. Or you could just send him all the way deep, deep post, nine routes, whatever it was, and he could sometimes torch defensive backs that way. You don't have the luxury of having that all three levels of the field threat, I would just say, that can command the attention of the defense. So you've got to do it with multiple players. But I think they have a diverse athletic group there to be able to do that if they put them in the right position. So you need Marquez Valdes-Scantling to be a great deep threat for you. You need Mecole Hardman to be somebody who can really do some damage for you in the short to intermediate. And then I think Sky Moore is the ultimate X factor for them. I really do, because if Sky Moore isn't able to be reliable for them during the regular season, all of a sudden this receiver group doesn't look as threatening, right? And you're going to put a lot more pressure on Patrick Mahomes' shoulders to make the magic happen. But if you could throw Sky Moore in there, given his skill set, how great he can be off the line of scrimmage, how good of a separator he is, how savvy he is as a route runner, and how much he likes being a deep threat as well. If we get that college Sky Moore close to right away in the regular season, then that changes the math a little bit. That makes it a lot harder to defend demands that teams really put four good defensive backs out there and four defensive backs that have a lot of athleticism with them. So I think that really Moore is the X factor, but that's kind of how I see the Chiefs group this year.
You wrote about Sky Moore when he was in college coming out for the NFL draft, and you do a great job covering the draft for Pro Football Focus. And so we had heard when training camp started, multiple people talking about, you know, he wears number 24. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire was like, you know, the offense is so diverse, I can line up on the outside and 24 can be in the backfield. Juju Smith-Schuster had said at a press conference, well, you know, 24, I mean, he's like a running back. You give him the ball and he's going to be breaking tackles and he does some of those things. Andy Reid had mentioned like, well, you know, we've got so many different guys that we can do different things with. I mean, you know, Sky, you know, if we wanted to hand the ball off, we could do that. And Mecole Hardman on an end around. Multiple people mentioned that, Trevor. Then yesterday at training camp, video comes out, Sky Moore lining up in the backfield and Patrick Mahomes handing the ball off to Sky Moore. There's a long way from, hey, Sky Moore could carry the ball, to Deebo Samuel. And I think that's a leap too many people are talking about. Like, is he going to be Deebo? Not at all. But do you see to where the Chiefs would say, you know what, we're going to give this guy the ball in the backfield too, because he can do so many different things?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, in my article that I wrote about Sky Moore, one of the very first things that I say is he's about as natural of an athlete as you're going to find on the football field. He really is. I mean, he grew up playing defensive back, playing running back, playing wide receiver. Shoot, he even played quarterback in high school, I believe, because his quote was, he went out for practice the very first day of high school football, and he was playing wide receiver because he wanted to play wide receiver. He said, I think he believed that he ran just a comeback route, and the quarterback overthrew him so bad that the coach went, hey, Sky, you want to try quarterback? And he's like, all right, fine. He never got to play wide receiver again after that. They just put him at quarterback, and they let him play quarterback in high school. And so he ended up transitioning over to defensive back after that, got recruited mainly as defensive back, but actually got a chance to play wide receiver when he was at Central Michigan. So he is just such a natural, whether it's quarterback, running back, defensive back, wide receiver, he's a guy who you want the ball in his hands. You just have so much faith that he is going to make the right moves, that he is the athlete that he needs to be no matter where he is lining up. And I think he's in a perfect spot with Andy Reid, who we've seen is not afraid at all to get really creative with how he uses his players. And the best coaches in the NFL, I cannot stress this enough, the best coaches in the NFL look at the players that they have and put them in the best positions to succeed, regardless of where the position might be. You know, I think that that's why Kyle Shanahan has gotten so much praise and we see so much love for Deebo Samuel now, is because he looked at Deebo Samuel and said, okay, not only is this guy great as a wide receiver, but what if I put him in the backfield and sometimes got him matched up against linebackers, right? Because defenses, I think that's the biggest area where we see this shift for offenses over the last 5 years against modern defenses, because defenses have been a little bit slower to kind of figure out the rules of how we guard everybody, right? As the offenses are getting faster, more spread out, all of a sudden you've got these number one wide receivers like Julio Jones and Mike Evans, and they're playing in the slot against slot corners, and you've got guys like Deebo Samuel or Curtis Samuel or these players coming out of the backfield as these wide receivers that are lined up against linebackers and safeties. And the best coaches in the NFL recognize where they have talent and where that talent can be the biggest mismatch for them. Andy Reid does that about as good as any coach in the NFL. So I loved, not only did I love Sky Moore as a prospect, I loved where he went because I knew the Chiefs were going to give him a chance right away to make a difference, knowing how great of a natural athlete he is. So there's no doubt about it, I could see them using him all over the field this rookie year. As long as he knows the playbook, as long as he has his responsibilities, they're not going to have any fear or reservations about where to play him.
Last one for you, Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, also a host of NFL Stock Exchange podcast. You guys did the redraft of every player in the NFL. It went number one, Mahomes, number two, Josh Allen. How close is that? How close is, because, you know, I've said that if somebody wants to argue for Josh Allen, I'm actually not going to offer that much of a, you know, I'm not going to be a heated exchange. I'm like, okay, yeah, I see where I would go different, but I see where you're coming from. I'm picking the Bills to win the Super Bowl this year. How close is it if you're redrafting and every NFL front office sitting there and saying, do we want Mahomes and Allen? How close do you think it would be between the two?
No, I mean, it's a coin flip. You know, I think that it would just change depending on the week, you know, right? If Mahomes had a, if you polled all 32 GMs in the NFL, if Mahomes had a game where he was throwing for almost 400 yards and three or four touchdowns, they might say, ah, yeah, nobody's better than Mahomes. Or if you have a crazy Josh Allen game where he's doing a lot of things with his legs and his arm, you go, no, we got to see Josh Allen. It really is. It's a coin flip. And there's not a wrong answer, right? Everybody loves numerical lists. They love this guy over that guy. But this really is one of those, it's one of those situations where there's not a wrong answer here. Now, I am very intrigued to see what Josh Allen is without Brian Daboll there as the offensive coordinator. Not to say that I'm expecting a big time down year for Josh Allen. I would just love to see it, because all of a sudden, if Josh continues to play at an MVP level with a new offensive coordinator there, albeit I know they're going to do a lot of the same things, but just a different voice in his headset, that solidifies the conversation without a shadow of a doubt that these two guys are the best in the NFL, and that it is this tier of player, especially with the talent levels that they have, at the age that they have. You look at, if you're starting a franchise, how many incredible years you're going to have with both of these guys. And I think that what we saw last year in the playoffs between Allen and Mahomes, I certainly hope that health and these teams allow this to be the new Brady and Peyton rivalry, that we get two of the best in the NFL for the next 10 years getting to go up against each other, New England and Indianapolis, those two teams both in the NFC, so we were able to see Brady versus Manning a lot in games that really, really mattered. I hope that is the case with Mahomes and Allen, because we have seen the talent level that these guys have, and it is insane. So that's what I'm hoping for. That's how close it is. Two of the best in the NFL, no doubt about it.
And if they keep winning their division, we'll see it every year. So that'll certainly, we could all can get that entertainment. Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, also host NFL Stock Exchange. Does a great job covering the draft, covering the NFL as well. Trevor, you're the man. I really appreciate the time. Enjoyed it as usual. So thank you so much for coming on. And enjoy the football now that we are closer and closer to games next week starting up. But last night, a Hall of Fame game as well. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Looking beautiful.
I think we've lost Trevor there, but that's okay. Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus. Again, NFL Stock Exchange. Thank you so much for him taking the time out today to join us and talk about the different things that he has written about at Pro Football Focus and his opinion on some of those things with the Chiefs. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We got what's on tap. We got the cuts all still to come. Heading up until 2 o'clock on this Friday. It's Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
It would have been a... Just killed a spider that was crawling on the table here. Take that, spider. Huh? Yeah. In your face. Punk.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you to Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, joining us. Boy, perfect timing there at the end when his phone eventually cut out or something. I don't know. So, yeah, worked out well. Could have happened at any time in the interview. Instead, it was when it was letting him go. But thank you to Trevor for joining us and talking some football there. 913-912-4810. You know, we're going to give away some tickets to the WHB 100-year celebration here in just a little bit. But did want to pass along this information that came out today. And that the Kansas City Royals have announced in partnership with the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum and the Negro League Museum as well, that Buck O'Neill's Hall of Fame plaque is going to be brought from Cooperstown to Kansas City for public display next Friday and Saturday. On Friday, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., it will be at the Negro League's Baseball Museum. So Friday, August 12th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., the Buck O'Neill plaque that is actually in the Hall of Fame. The National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum has allowed that plaque to be put on display in Kansas City for a couple of days. And then on Saturday, in conjunction with the ball club's annual salute to the Negro Leagues event. So Saturday, August 13th, the Royals hosting the Dodgers. That's a 6 o'clock start. And the plaque is going to be on field for a pregame ceremony. Then it's going to be moved to the Royals Hall of Fame inside Kauffman Stadium, where you can go and visit and view it and things like that during the game. So pretty cool that Buck O'Neill's plaque is going to be on display next Friday and Saturday. A couple of opportunities. The museum on Friday and the Royals game on Saturday. So again, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. next Friday at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, and then at the Royals game on Saturday.
So also, cool. Bob Kendrick, when he was on with us, what, that a couple weeks ago, I guess,
yep.
He mentioned, you know, they were going to have some new news from the museum. The Thanks a Million Buck campaign is what they kicked off just a day or two after we talked to Bob, and lots more information across all of the NLBM's various socials and everything, if you want to check out more on that campaign and what they're trying to do there.
Awesome. Absolutely. So that was cool to see that, and the Thanks a Million Buck campaign that's going on as well. The 100-year celebration is coming up on Thursday at the Midland Theater. We've been giving away tickets. Have we done the Twitch and YouTube and Facebook?
I've got some winners picked out.
Okay. Buddha's been twitching over there all day.
You might have some extra tickets, though, so if you're watching on any of those, leave a comment, or like I said, on the YouTube one, since I can't directly message you in there, DM me at BeardsMcFly. We'll see okay. what we can do.
Hey, you know what? You want to extend that to some podcast listeners as well? Because we do have,
really?
You know,
that's interesting.
We have the army of Zone podcast listeners, I presume. Our numbers are pretty good. So, sure. I don't know, if you want to, you got to have something to offer, Beards. You got to have, I don't mean like a bribe. I mean, I'm sure you would take it.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know.
Maybe a bribe.
If you give Beards your bona fides or something, I'm not sure how to make that happen. But, you know, I want to acknowledge the people that listen to this show in different ways.
That's bona fides for the American.
Yeah.
Damn right.
Pat Angerer.
Well, yes.
You're getting pretty pet. Jason, you're getting Angerer and Angerer today.
Richard Sherman / Seymour. That's actually Devon Anger.
What would it be if Richard,
Parker.
If those Richards like combined their last names? What would their name be?
Richard Shermore?
Any other ways
nope.
you could mash that?
Nope.
All right.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Trying to get one more cut in before the end of the week.
Yeah, not going to happen. We'll do the cuts
all
coming
right.
up in the next segment. Not right now.
913.
No. 913-912-4810. How do we want to give this away? Let's come up with some clever idea to where we can give away a pair of tickets to the 100-year celebration next Thursday.
You want to make it a little? I have a little trivia wrinkle that should be pretty easy. So I think, but we'll see if people can get there.
Is it going to be a call in or a text in?
Yeah, call in, and I think we could give it to the first. If you are so inclined, we were talking during the break about a baseball graphic that about in all the detail that you need to see on the radio. But if you call in and you can tell Beards. How many players who were drafted or signed in the Royals organization are currently at the top of their depth chart at their position for another team? Just the number, if you give the players also, you know, I'm not going to give too many hints as to how difficult or easy that may be. But one of them, was in Kansas City, is in Kansas City right now.
There's one.
That's one.
So how many others?
How many other Royals? How many total Royals are there?
Does this include pitchers?
An ace.
Only like a number one starter based off the chart I have here. And I'll give
plenty
you a free
of those
hint
out there in the Royal, from the Royals organization.
Free hint: the Royals have not drafted and chipped off an ace at any point recently.
What? So that would be like, you know, for
Isaiah,
the Royals.
Tell Beards what the answer is.
So like for the Royals, it would be, well, now you're going to tell the people that are on the.
I was turning away from the cameras. I was trying to shield the Twitch.
Oh yeah. So for the Royals, it'd be like, you know, Salvi at catcher. There's one.
Right.
Bobby Witt, Nicky Lopez, you know, players that they have drafted or signed. Vinny Pasquantino and Nick Prada. They would
and
have this, a lot.
I'll give you the Royals side of it from the graphic. Everybody, including one, you know, that quote unquote top starting pitcher and quote unquote top DH, the Royals have one player not from their own farm system organization, et cetera. Being Michael A. Taylor in center field.
They have the most out of all of the different players there. They have the most of any team that is drafted / signed by the Royals organization, signed internationally, or drafted, that are the starters at their spot.
Right,
on the depth
which
chart, so.
Is cool if they play good baseball. If you're not winning, it's not great. But the other side of that stat that has become our winning trivia question, I think, is...
There we go.
Is very interesting.
What's the number? How many players have the Royals drafted or signed that are now a starter on a different team? It's another way to put it. Not a starting pitcher, but just a starter at their position for a different team. They are the top of the depth chart, and a starting pitcher counts as well, but that would be the best starting pitcher of that team. Just how many is it? 913-3-810-810 is the phone number, 913-3-810-810, and you get a pair of tickets to the 100-year celebration for WHB.
Perhaps
next Thursday.
Perhaps an argument for there to be one additional one to the number I gave you, Beards. Somebody tweeted in noting... that I'm just going to give you the name. No, I wasn't counting this originally. I was not counting Frank Schwindel getting a lot of DH work for the Cubs.
Yeah.
But if you're going to include him, it could be one more than I told you, Beards. But I think people should have to give the names.
Well, the... Who do they have as the Cubs?
I have no idea.
Well, that's what I'm going to look at right now. So... They have it blank.
Oh, there you go.
Just noticed that. They have a blank. It's the only thing that they have blank on any of these. So I'm guessing it's just like no specific player there.
We've given you now arguably Schwindel and definitely a current first baseman for the Boston Red Sox who was in town last night.
Definitely one.
So we've got one and a half.
Yeah.
You should be able to come up with the names of the entirety of the list, I would think.
913-3-810-810 is the phone number. But, you know, we discussed Royals baseball to start the show. We've talked a lot of Chiefs football today, but we started off with Royals baseball with Eric Hosmer making his return to Kansas City last night. And a couple of, like, actual takeaways from the game besides just, hey, here are the memories rushing back from Eric Hosmer being at Kauffman Stadium, is Chris Bubich on the mound last night. That the first inning was a rough one for Chris Bubich. And it's like, okay, here we go. Let's see what Bubich can do. And then he ends up going five more innings, not giving up a run. So six innings, two earned runs, has only five base runners, one walk, six strikeouts last night against the Red Sox. A good outing for the Royals. And he was awful at the beginning of the year this year. They sent him back down. They called him back up. And since he's been called up, that's 12 starts that he's had since called back up. He has a 3.76 ERA. He's got a 1.4 whip, which certainly you need to be better, but a sub-4 ERA, and he's pitching into the sixth inning. He's averaging 5 2/3 innings pitched each time out. So he's going and throwing a pitch in the sixth inning, which there was a stretch for the Royals where they had about 10 or 11 games where pitchers had like twice out of their starters thrown a pitch in the sixth inning. Like, it was a rough stretch where you got four innings, three innings, five innings, four innings, three innings, five innings. You couldn't even get to 5 1/3, something like that. So Chris Bubich last night, also continuing with Chris Bubich, if you take away those games this year when he was just awful and you look at his entire career outside of those six or seven games, he's got a 4.23 ERA. Oddly enough, a 1.4 whip. So that has been constant. The one constant there has been his whip. And he's got a 2-1 strikeout to walk ratio. You'd like that to be better. 110 walks and 220 strikeouts. You'd like that to be better. But again, as I've said about Chris Bubich, is if this is your fifth starter, I'm fine with that. I'm fine. And he continues to go out and show that if he's your fifth starter, he can, you know, be a part of a big league rotation. And the rookies in the lineup last night, five of them, combined 7 for 18, three RBIs, four runs scored, a double, a home run, two stolen bases in the game last night. And Chris Bubich goes out there and did what he did. It's a fun night last night. Hosmer returns, the rookies look good, and Chris Bubich goes six innings. And the only thing missing was that Salvi got credited with the home run instead of a double, because that would have been better if it was a double, because then Scott Barlow could have got the save, and that would have been number 18 for him this year. Instead, they gave a home run to Salvi that's an extra run, and now Scott Barlow has still 17 saves. He didn't get the save because it was four runs. Bah, 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 bah.
How dare he?
I know, right?
Salvi, selfish, not a team player. Totally. You've often said this.
I may be out on a limb and all by myself on this one, but I...
Salvador Perez, bad teammate, says Jason Anderson.
That's right. Let's tell you what's on tap this weekend, presented by KC Beer Company, kcbier.com. What is on tap? Well, the Royals tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, finishing off the series against the Red Sox. Greinke in action tonight. Daniel Lynch on Saturday. Daniel Lynch versus Eric Hosmer. When Hosmer comes up to plate, you will have Daniel Lynch, the starting pitcher, facing off against Eric Hosmer. Hosmer, when he walked, the Royals got the comp pick, in which they used on Daniel Lynch. Ooh. And then Brad Keller going to the mound on Sunday.
He's screwed, by the way.
Brad Keller is?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going up against Cutter Crawford.
If your name is Cutter Crawford, I know that he's still pretty fresh. I've pulled up his baseball reference page. Cutter Crawford has to be a Hall of Famer. You're a pitcher whose first name is Cutter with a K.
Cutter, that's right, exactly. And it's
incredible.
If it was a backwards K, it'd be even better.
Oh, perfect.
It'd be awesome. Sporting in action tomorrow, 7:30, right here on Sports Radio 810 against L.A. The Current heading to San Diego on Sunday at 4 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 810. Monarchs in action in Kane County tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. NASCAR on Sunday, the Firekeepers Casino 400 in Michigan International Speedway. That's going to be on ESPN KC. Premier League starts in about, 13 minutes? Crystal Palace v. Arsenal, and then PGA wrapping up the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro this weekend as well, 2 o'clock tomorrow and Sunday on CBS. That's what's on tap this weekend, presented by KC Beer. We'll take a timeout, come back, more Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
If I can't be here to try to get you on a technicality once per show, what the bleep is the point of me being here?
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so the answer to that question was two that we gave out earlier for the tickets. Beards hates fun and says we don't have a lot of time for cuts, so take it away, Beards! Go.
Eric Hosmer.
It is not Yitz.
Chugga-chugga. Choo-choo, mother bleeper.
Winner, Curtis Cougar.
What was it?
You did not Yitz.
Those two names haven't been set together in a long time.
Thank you so much for the time, man.
Oh, that's a beautiful tab.
Perfect. Jason Anderson Insider is not worse than Jason Insiderson.
We got him to say it. Beards, mark it. We got him to say it. This is the new imaging.
I walked right into it.
There was a story in free agency. One of the teams, they were interested, and all of a sudden, they weren't interested at the very end. I was sitting there thinking, you're sticking with that mother... Are you serious? Tom probably had no desire to go to that team, but now it's like, why don't you want me?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, absolutely. When I look back, I'm like, I just don't way I would have went to that team. But they said they didn't want me, and I know what that means. I know what that feels like, and I'm going to you up because of that.
It was the Bears.
Had to be.
The first thing that sticks out is the length.
Okay, thanks, Bags.
Well, I was going to start with Royals trade, but
yes.
I think I'm just going to do Major League Baseball instead.
Old bait and switch. Got me.
That is blinking fertilizer.
Fertilizer.
Great call by Vin Scully.
I banged a paragraph.
Good for you. Whatever
they
you
gave me a card.
You
played.
No. Like a farewell card. They gave you a farewell card?
Yeah. They did. They sent it to me.
I didn't get no card.
Tyreek.
Jason's logic was so confusing. It just dazes you, and you're like, yes. Yeah, I guess.
Yes, that's his plan.
Yeah,
he runs
no
circles around.
What talking about.
Would mark that for every returner ever. Oh, Adam, he's figured me out.
Got too many hours on with you.
Crack the code.
Speaking of your brother, you guys are wearing the new Guardian deal. Did you see he put the bubble wrap on his Guardian cap?
Yeah, you guys thought I was a prick. He's the...
TK.
We got some good guys up in the front line, especially, you know, Carl Lafagas getting in there.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about that. We're just trying to have a good training camp here.
Do you have any idea the Dolphins are tampering with their starting quarterback next season?
Yeah, focused on training camp here. That's all in the past.
Not sure what you thought you were going to get from Belichick.
So check your bags. Make sure you've declared your sausage. That's my lesson of the week. You're welcome.
All right. There we go. All the things you learned this week.
Learned a lot.
One clip.
Thank you, Jason and Siderson, for such a good week of shows.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you. Couldn't have done it without you. We could have, but, you know, it might have been better. So thank you, Beards. You too. Program, Todd Lebo, Curtis Ebolt next.